Please pray with me. O Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen.
Amen.
Do the Magi really believe Herod, that he wants to pay homage to this newborn king? We do not know. But we do know that Herod wants this knowledge in order to eliminate this new threat to his reign. Knowledge is power. On this, king and Magi seem to agree. Yet Herod and the Magi approach knowledge from vastly different perspectives. Herod treats knowledge as an essential weapon in his quiver of control through violence or the threat of violence. Stars and magi and prophets are suppliers of ammunition to a king who wants to silence his opposition. For Herod, knowledge is like any other commodity, bought, sold, traded, and acquired as a thing to be used for advantage in a competitive game of winners and losers. Knowledge outside of his control is cause for fear. The Magi, on the other hand, treat knowledge as the guide that leads them into new revelation. Knowledge is not something to be acquired, but beheld. Not something to be owned or managed, but observed and shared. And this leads them confidently into the realm of the unknown, where, like docks in a harbor, they stand ready to receive vessels bearing new truths, ready to understand new forms of power, ready to behold new miracles. Knowledge outside of their control is not cause for fear, but grounds for awe. Awe that leads them into deeper inquiry and deeper investigation. As divisions deepen in our own world today, I'm afraid that we are becoming more like Herod and less like the Magi. Pursuing knowledge as a means for our control instead of allowing knowledge to guide us into awe and deeper inquiry. It's conventional wisdom in many of the circles that we run in today to divide the world up into those who, quote, believe in science and those who do not. On the one side, we have those of us who, for example, wear masks, see that climate change is real and deadly, and who trust in vaccinations for ourselves and our children. On the other side, we have those who reject masks, deny climate science, and turn public health guidance into partisan warfare. Let's assume for a moment that this description, however oversimplified, is mostly true. In that case, the antidote to the problem would be to somehow convince science-denying, truth-rejecting people of the error of their ways. We might then measure our effectiveness at strategies and techniques that actually produce the kinds of change that we are hoping to see in other people. What helps people go from rejecting science to appreciating it? What nurtures in others a love of investigation, a marveling in the presence of the unexplained instead of fearing the unknown? What helps change people's minds? What I'm actually seeing more and more of is a kind of camp-like mentality that digs us deeper into our fortified trenches of group identities. Increasingly, our choices separate us into these camps. The neighborhoods where we live, the churches that we attend, the politics that we espouse, the TV news stations that we watch, the news sites that we read, the feeds that we receive on our social media apps reinforce these camps through algorithms that push us into like-minded groups, making it harder for human beings to challenge, engage, and interact with one another. So on my TikTok feed, I'll see documented police stops where police misconduct is verified, validating what I already believe to be true. I see angry, maskless Karens disrespecting employees of color in coffee shops that I'm apt to visit. I hear testimonies from former evangelicals educating everyone on the experiences of their oppression and the accuracy of the liberal truths they have now come to embrace. And it feels good to have what I already knew to be true validated. I feel safe and secure in the confirmation of what I already believe and know to be true. The problem, of course, is that for every person like me, there is a person on the other side of things who is receiving video clips of police disrespected in heroic acts of service, clips of arrogant liberal elites patronizing someone's rural family-centered culture, and segments of angry atheists ripping into someone's most cherished doctrines of faith. They too are having their beliefs confirmed and validated from an opposite perspective. I don't pretend to know how we change this current predicament. The classic way that moderates have tried to address this problem in the history of our own nation is by pushing everyone to the middle of whatever political continuum existed at the time. This sounds reasonable, except when you look at what it's actually meant in history. White moderates rejecting the expansion of slavery, for example, but opposing its abolition. Or white moderates in more modern day Birmingham lecturing Dr. King on their support of racial equality, but opposing the efforts of those who demanded that it be so. Or so much of the church in the last 40 or 50 years trying to sidestep LGBTQ equality by refusing to address the issues that led and continues to reinforce the exclusion of so many of us or those we love. Moving to the middle is sometimes the right answer, but not always or even often so. I'm not sure how to extricate ourselves from the current divisions, but I think reassessing our relationship to knowledge is a good place to start, how we see it and how we use it. The Magi used their knowledge not as a reason to rest from their quest, but as a way to deepen it. Stephen Jay Gould, the great anthropologist, once said that the most erroneous stories are those we think we know best and therefore never scrutinize or question. Too many of us in fields of every kind, politics, science, economics, theology, we treat what tentative truths we know as final conclusions. Consider how those Magi got to Bethlehem. They used their existing knowledge and expertise of signs in the heavens in order to travel to the place where they thought they would find a king. Once there in Jerusalem, they had to suspend their prior judgment by receiving new information from prophets outside of their faith and outside of their culture, enabling them to follow a star to a place where they found a child. Before returning home, they paid attention to their own dreams that led them once again to change their previously held direction and go home by a different way. They received new knowledge time and time again, only because they were open to it. Knowledge itself does not lead to this kind of openness. Sometimes it leads to arrogance. And arrogance is blinding, sometimes even deadly for human beings. Flight accident researchers have noticed that a disproportionate number of flight accidents happen to general aviation pilots within a particular range of hours. Pilots with more than 100 hours of flight time, but less than 350, live within a range that has now been coined the kill zone. As pilots get confident with greater experience, they also tend to become more comfortable, less attentive, and less careful. Confidence, that is not offset by care and attention can kill you. Knowledge itself doesn't lead to better outcomes. Columnist Jennifer Senior pointed out recently that more than one third of the members of the House and more than one half of the members of the Senate have law degrees. A fifth of the Senate and the House have master's degrees. More than 95% of the House has a bachelor's degree, as does every single member of the Senate. Senior points to recent work from Michael Sandel, who makes the point that while there's a good argument for having well-educated representation, history shows there is very little correlation between good governance and educational attainment. The best and the brightest gave us Vietnam, he points out, and more recently, the highly credentialed gave us stagnant wages, financial deregulation, income inequality, the financial crisis of 2008, a bank bailout that did little to help ordinary people, a decaying infrastructure, and the highest incarceration rate in the world. Knowledge itself doesn't lead to better outcomes. Of course, having dumber people in Congress isn't the solution either. It's having less arrogance and greater connection. Look at the Magi. They are likely as elite as Herod when it comes to pedigree, educational privilege, and status. The gifts they bring to Jesus and his family betray their privilege. What sets them apart is their willingness to follow that star all the way to where it leads, to a king that doesn't fit anyone's kingly expectations, to a babe born to a poor family outside of the normative stations of power. Historically, the church has pointed to Epiphany, which is technically this coming Wednesday, 12 days after Christmas, as the time when the good news was revealed to the Gentiles. Matthew's Jewish perspective is on full display here, criticizing his own establishment. They missed the Messiah, he argues, while visitors outside of our faith and religion recognized him for what he was. Like so much that is wrong with the church's history, some church leaders turned that into an anti-Jewish screed. They missed their own Messiah, but we didn't. But that is Herod's view of knowledge, dividing up the world into winners and losers. A better read would be to notice what joy comes to those of us who are willing to journey beyond our settled notions of what power can look like, of where truth can reside. Notice what joy comes from people who are willing to risk leaving their own tribe, their own certainties, to journey off beaten paths. Notice this multi-faith encounter where people who love truth conspire with one another to resist violence. Notice how the best kinds of religious authorities are more like sojourners and less like border guards. Notice how when we listen to our dreams, we find there is more than one way home. Stephen Jay Gould wrote that the most important scientific revolutions all include as their only common feature the dethronement of human arrogance from one pedestal after another, of previous convictions about our centrality in the cosmos. We could say something similar about the revolution of Jesus of Nazareth. He ushers in with his body what he says with his words. This new kingdom or this new realm is foundationally decentering of most of what we have latched onto in life. in its place is something much more fragile and much more powerful. Love for our neighbors that Jesus teaches us is, in fact, love for God. A community that is developed on this ridiculously simple model that proves to be incredibly difficult for human beings to trust, much less to build together. Yet this model of love for the neighbor endures, and signs of its implementation, however incomplete, have endured, while the empires that challenged it and continue to challenge it continue to fall. The perseverance of that hope may be one of its most enduring and defining features. The Magi teach us that our own perseverance in our journey toward God with us is less like those disciplines of runners sticking to their daily regimens, narrowly focused on a single goal of conquering the race to come, and more like a child let loose in a forest, smelling this flower and noticing another, skipping from one miracle to the next, a world teeming with gifts, too many to open. An opening of the heart, a relinquishing of control, a departure from a settled path, seeking God's guidance is ultimately what leads us to that overwhelming joy. In all things, trusting that no matter where our journeys may take us, no matter what dangerous threats we may encounter, no matter what losses we must endure, when we stay open to what is being revealed to us in stars and texts and dreams and in other human beings, there is great joy to be experienced, and there is more than one way to find our way home. Amen.